Hi everyone, this is Catherine from the Media Education Lab, and you're listening to the Courageous RI podcast, the show that finds common ground, builds media literacy skills, and encourages curiosity for the people of Rhode Island. In this episode, our host Renee Hobbs talks to Elizaveta Friesem, who is an independent scholar of communication, an editor, and a writer. She's also been contributing to Courageous Rhode Island as a blog writer and a conversation facilitator. Today, you'll hear her talk about what nonviolent communication is, why it's important, and how it can help us find common ground, as well as the role that media literacy plays in communication.
Hi there, I'm Renee Hobbs, and welcome to another podcast episode from Courageous RI. Today, I'm joined with my friend and colleague, Elizaveta Friesem. She's an independent scholar and expert on media literacy, and she's the author of a book called Media Is Us. Elisa, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're really happy to have you. So you've been participating in the Courageous RI conversations, and you bring a special expertise in nonviolent communication. And since Courageous Conversations are really designed to use the power of dialogue and discussion to apply media literacy concepts and listening practices in ways that reduce the hate that lead to violence, the topic of nonviolent communication super important and relevant. But a lot of people who are participating in this experience and are listening to this podcast, they might not have ever heard the term nonviolent communication. What is nonviolent communication and why is it important?
Well, this is a great approach that was created by a therapist and a counselor, a mediator, whose name was Marshall Rosenberg. And he drew on his experience with all sorts of counseling and therapy, and also working with different groups, starting from urban conflicts between police and gangs, and international, like he traveled to Israel and Palestine. He wanted to offer a very specific approach that anybody could use. And it's based on the idea that when we're engaged in a conflict, we often do not realize, cannot articulate for ourselves what we are feeling, what we're experiencing. And we are not thinking about the other side, what they're feeling and what they're experiencing. We're just discussing the problem, and we're often engaging in blame, right? And we're not taking responsibility about for how we are, what we are contributing to the situation. So nonviolent communication starts with articulating clearly for yourself your feelings, and then articulating the, you know, trying to guess the feelings of the other side without assuming bad intent. Then thinking about the needs behind those feelings, because all the feelings signal either met or unmet needs. And often feelings, like, you know, that we describe as negative feelings, they signal unmet needs. So instead of assuming that the other person is bad or stupid, we can think, well, what do they need? What are they expressing through their actions? So I think that this is a great approach because it allows us to have a deeper conversation, to engage in listening, and also to use self-awareness when we are participating in difficult conversations.
Wow, I love this idea that recognizing your own feelings in a conflict situation is something that we tend to skip over, or we oversimplify. And I love the idea that listening for unmet needs, trying to make inferences about unmet needs, and really being open to acknowledging that conflict comes from when people's needs are unmet. That seems like a very strategic and intentional approach to communication. What's going on in the culture right now that makes nonviolent communication more important than ever before?
Well, I think we see that because we are in the depth of what's known as affective polarization, right? With based on our affect, like emotions, people from any side, and I don't like dividing people into like two sides. It's a lot of sides, a lot of angles to this. Different groups, they find it difficult to think about other people without getting really emotional. And when we get really emotional, then I guess counterintuitively, you know, we're experiencing a lot of feelings, but it's very difficult for us to actually articulate what we're feeling. So instead of engaging in this very emotional debate that hurts everybody involved, nonviolent communication proposes that we pause, we take a deep breath, and we ask ourselves what is really going on. It's not like there's a good side and bad side, good guys and bad guys. It's much more complicated than that. And then from there we start having this really deep, complex conversation about our involvement, about what we're experiencing, about what other people are experiencing, and trying to get somewhere where we can see beyond our differences and actually discuss things that we have in common and goals that we have in common and move towards those common goals.
It's so huge and powerful. And my experience has been is that the most fundamental need that we all have is to be respected and to be understood. And the need to be respected and understood is huge because people carry around feelings of being disrespected, feelings of being unheard, of people's needs not being met. And to be open to listen for that and to cultivate respect and appreciation for different people's needs and feelings, it just seems a really powerful paradigm. I'm really glad you've highlighted this powerful tool, nonviolent communication, for us. I know that you're a media scholar and a media literacy scholar, and so you've been paying a lot of attention to how social media communication skills, how people activate different kind of communication skills in the context of social media. And I'm hoping that you can talk to us a little bit about your conceptualization of online kindness and why it matters. Can you say more about that?
Yes, sure. Thank you so much for bringing it up. That's the topic of my latest blog post for Courageous RI. And I just feel that this is something that is not there, and we really need to have it. This online kindness is because people go online and there's a lot of information online, right? And all sorts of information, all sorts of opinions, which is great, right? That people can go online and express their opinions. But then there's a lot of confusion and a lot of emotions, and also what happens that we go online and we see opinions different from ours, we feel tempted to join the conversation and to explain to whoever is expressing those opinions why they're wrong. And it feels like a logical thing to do, right? But it actually backfires. If some people might say, well, why am I supposed to be kind to somebody who, you know, online spreads misinformation or is angry and creates toxic environment? But partially it's a kind of a selfish, you can say that it's almost a selfish intent, because when we are kind to people online, we actually decrease polarization. You know, don't assume that people who are angry online are just mean and stupid and rude and ignorant, right? And don't come to a conversation trying to educate them, but instead come to a conversation with a honest curiosity about their worldviews, and try to learn from them. We actually, first of all, we have better chances of having people listen to us, right? Because if you just come and educate somebody, you know, they just won't, they will go away, or they will just, anger will spiral out of control. So if our goal is to have our point of view be heard, then, you know, if we are kinder to people online, we actually have better chances of achieving this, right? And also when we are curious, when we are honestly curious about what other people online or offline, what they're experiencing, where they come from, then we can explain our position better. And you know, if we just think that somebody is ignorant, we cannot really engage in a productive conversation with them. And maybe there are some points where they are wrong, and when we better understand the points where they are right, and don't assume that they're just wrong, you know, all across, you know, the spectrum, then we can actually have a conversation with them. And but that requires also acknowledging that we might be wrong in some ways and right in some ways. So that's why I think that being kind to other people online is essential for the future of democracy.
I really appreciate how you understand the transformative potential of being kind in relation to our own growth as learners, right? It allows us to be in a position where we actually might learn something. And it requires a lot of humility to and discipline, I think, to stand in that position. But I appreciate how you frame it in relation to like self-interest as well, right? It's in our best interest to maintain this stance of kindness. And that makes perfect sense to me, because whenever I put someone in the other box, right, I diminish myself. I weaken my own ability to see the person for the complex human being that they really are, right? So I miss an opportunity. So I really appreciate that framing. And I think in a lot of ways, your empathic stance toward managing in interpersonal conflict and online conflict is really a really interesting way to connect to the concept of media literacy. So I'm really interested in how you define media literacy for your students, for your readers, and for the people you influence, and a little bit about what media literacy means in relation to our goal of helping people find common ground, helping reduce the hate that leads to violence, and helping build people's critical thinking skills about media. What's media literacy mean to you, and how does it support these big, broad goals?
Well, thank you for those great questions. Well, I'll start with literacy. And when we think, often when people think literacy, they think reading and writing, but literacy is also, we can find in such phrases and it's financial literacy, right? So, international literacy. You can put it with many
science
different
literacy.
Words, right? Literacy means the ability to engage deeply, right? To understand deeply. It's like a set of competencies that involve critical thinking, analysis, and then ability to apply your knowledge, right? So that's what literacy is for me. And as for media, I will refer to my book, Media is Us, right? It's the full title is Media is Us, Understanding Communication and Moving Beyond Blame. And in this book, I discuss how we often tend to think about media like just in terms of the latest technologies, you know, ChatGPT we mentioned before starting this conversation. There are obviously books and computers, but for me, the essential element of media is, I mean, technology is important, but the essential element is actually people, right? Because just technology without people, you know, is not media. Media, you know, is a plural of medium. It something that connects, right? And the connection, the process of connection is only possible if there are points of connection, if they are present, right? So so media, I in my book, I discuss how media is people communicating with each other through technology. And so media literacy in this context becomes understanding people who communicate with each other through technology, through all kinds of technology. And I discuss in my book how, you know, language is also a kind of technology.
Right,
because it's a tool that we learn that is flawed, and all other things that are so interested about language. So media literacy means understanding how we communicate with each other through technology, understanding others, understanding ourselves, and it involves a lot of self-awareness, including understanding how our brains work, how we see the world, and how we construct the world for ourselves and each other. It's also part of it is understanding how people interact, their relationships, like power relationships is huge in media literacy. But I stress in my book how we should go beyond blame. And when we talk about power, it's not just about calling out some other people who have power, but also recognizing how each one of us has certain amount of power and understanding how we use this power. So this is what media literacy is for me, and why it's how it's related to those broad topics like polarization, empathy is because you know, when people communicate with each other, they can help each other and they connect with and can learn, but they can also hurt each other, right? Because we're human beings, right? You know, so when we are becoming more media literate, we actually learn to connect with each other better, to maybe not eliminate completely the negative effects, but at least recognize them and maybe mitigate their you know, impact on our life. And empathy is a big part of it, because media literacy for me is not just about criticizing what somebody else does or does not, but also realizing realizing why they're doing it and how we do similar things, maybe not exactly the same, but or how we in their position would possibly act the same way, and then engaging in a dialogue instead of calling people out and blaming them and demanding that they change something.
It's so fascinating to me. Your book came out just last year. Is that right?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. And it seems like the ideas from that book are so relevant in relation to the Courageous RI project. And I really do think that media literacy has long aimed to help people move beyond blame, because blame oversimplifies, right? Blame does not account for the kind of complexity that is needed to understand human beings and our relationships and our ways of using these powerful symbol systems, language, images, sound, music, interactivity, moving image, that bringing those concepts together, media literacy and the beyond blame way of thinking about how we treat each other is such a powerful paradigm. I'm so proud and pleased of your work in this area. So glad you're part of the Courageous RI team. So thank you for joining us for this podcast today. We're going to be talking a lot more about empathy, conflict, and power as we move forward with Courageous RI. So thank you so much for being part of it. Elisaveta, I'm happy to showcase you in this podcast. We'll see you next time. For folks who are looking here, look below in the show notes where you'll be able to see how you can read Lisa's book and other information related to what she talked about today. Thanks for joining us, Lisa. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.